Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Did you know your credit card points and miles can lose value to inflation? Credit card companies often reduce the redemption value of your points and miles. Now, imagine a credit card with rewards that can grow in value. With the Gemini credit card, you can earn Bitcoin or one of over 50 other cryptos instantly with no annual fee. Every swipe at the store or gas pump earns you instant rewards deposited straight to your account. Plus, sign up now for a $200 Bitcoin bonus to kickstart your rewards. Visit Gemini.com/card today. Check out the link in the description for more information on rates and fees. Again, if you're looking to invest in Bitcoin but don't know where to start, the Gemini credit card makes it easy.
The Gemini credit card is issued by WebBank. In order to qualify for the $200 crypto intro bonus, you must spend $3,000 in your first 90 days. Terms apply. Some exclusions apply to instant rewards in which rewards are deposited when the transaction posts. This content is not investment advice, and trading crypto involves risk. For more details on rates, fees, and other cost information, see rates and fees. The Gemini credit card may not be used to make gambling-related purchases.
Hey, it's Boomer.
And Geo.
Boomer and Geo is both a radio show and a podcast. You can find us anytime on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your pods.
Catch the full episode, listen by individual hour, or jump straight to the highlights. Just open up your favorite podcast app, search Boomer and Geo, and hit the follow button to get every minute of the show your way and on your time.
During baseball season, when we started doing the nighttime live streams, they really wouldn't start till after 11. And, I mean, there's, 86 people watching right now? It fluctuates between, 86 to 100. But I feel like once we've been rolling for a few hours, there are more people off work or more people at home and more people just chilling. And maybe even West Coast time comes into play. The chat usually builds by the time it's, 11 o'clock, 12. And there's even times, shout out to Big Mac. One night I went home. Big Mac's like, yo, the live stream crashed. I'm like, all right, let me go fire it back up. And I look in the chat. I'm like, yo, there's a good healthy 150, 140 in the chat during the overnight. So, man, shout out to our YouTube channel, WFAN YouTube. It's increasing in subscribers daily. It was not like this 4 years ago when I first came in. We are approaching 90,000 subscribers. So if you want to stare at me and talk to random people in the chat, go for it. WFAN on YouTube. Just hit search, and you'll see the live circle, the red circle, and this show is streaming live, and then obviously on the Odyssey app and the radio and everything else. I'm in here watching the Toronto Blue Jays, who after Vladdy hit one off the wall in left field, Dalton Varsho hit one off the wall in right field. There was a wild pitch, and then Varsho with a bases-clearing double, and now the Blue Jays are up 5-2. George Kirby is batting practice right now, so we got a game here, folks. Can the M's battle back in their building? I'll keep an eye on that, but I've now opened that can of worms, which is the New York Yankees, which is supposed to be the mecca of baseball, the elite upper echelon, and here we go again, this Anthony Volpe story with Anthony Volpe getting surgery on his shoulder. You mean to tell me this young man went out there every day, and I get it. I get why he didn't pull himself out of the lineup. I get why, he's living his dream being the shortstop of the New York Yankees. He's trying to prove himself. No pain, no gain. He's champing it out. But sometimes you got to save a guy from himself. And I feel like it was negligent. I feel like it was irresponsible. And it was just plumb dumb. He wasn't performing well. It'd be one thing if it's Judge. I understood them kind of slow playing Judge, and they've done this so many times. It's literally on brand for them. They don't want to tell you Garrett Cole's got something going on. But with Volpe, he's young, and he was getting booed, and he was getting heckled, and he was struggling, and he struck out 150 times, and they just allowed that, man. Eric is in Massapequa on the fan next. What's up, Eric?
Hey, Keith. You know, to touch on what you were just saying, I was a real harsh critic of Volpe throughout the year. And you know, he's 23, 24. I cannot believe that Boone and Cashman allowed this kid, and exactly what you said, he's living his dream, allowed this kid to continue to go out there with a torn labrum. Let people like me call up BT. I've called up you. Let, you know, all these sports heads just crush this kid.
Mm-hmm.
For 4 months straight? How could they just let him just go out there like that? I cannot understand it. Not to mention, they traded for two guys who can play shortstop. So, I like you said, I really hope a reporter says to them, why on earth did you let somebody with a torn labrum continue to play all season? Like, I work construction. When there's something hurting, like, it's not so easy. Swinging a bat and throwing a baseball with a torn labrum is insane to me. I cannot understand how they left
it. Yeah, we were wondering why he couldn't hold on to the bat. And, like, maybe that also had something to do with all of the errors and just, like, the double clutching and, like just even having a little pain. You know, they always say, you know.
If you remember, there was one day he threw from shortstop to first. It was, like, 68 miles an hour. And everybody was like, whoa, what was that? Like, how are those not, like, red flags? But they're just so, this all stems from Cashman being so arrogant and not wanting to tell anybody anything, continuing to do the same thing he does every year, which doesn't work. That's why we lose every year in the playoffs. I don't understand how this guy.
They're going to be asked about it tomorrow. Thanks for the call, Eric. And yeah, I think we do owe Volpe a little bit of an apology. I tried to defend the guy. It's just dumb because if they would have just came out and said he was hurt and stopped this, we wouldn't have got that far. And even, like, I went back to check the box score. It was May 3rd. The Yankees are in first place. They were 19-14. They had other options. What's crazy to me is Volpe didn't come out of that game. And that game featured Oswaldo Cabrera at third, Yorbit Vivas at second. Pablo Reyes came into that game to play second base. You could have put Oswaldo at shortstop. You could have put Pablo Reyes at third and had him ice up, get some treatment, something. I don't understand. Explain it to me like I'm five, why a struggling player in Anthony Volpe, who at the time was batting 208, had an error in that game. They stopped that game. He said he heard something pop. What did you gain from running him out there every day? And he just got worse and worse and worse. It doesn't make any sense. It's stupid. Brian Hoke put out, here's what Brian Cashman said on September 12th about Volpe's shoulder, which required two cortisone injections. Does Anthony Volpe need surgery after the season? Brian Cashman said, as of right now, no, but I wouldn't rule it out either. They'll just repeat imaging and see where he's at. As of right now, there's no surgery recommended. There's not even an IL recommended. Okay, so that was September 12th. A month later, what changed? Like, is this another game within a game? How long is he going to be out? Are they going to pivot to another option? Or are we going to go with Caballero and Cabby versus Cabby? Cabrera versus Caballero for the shortstop spot? This is the New York Yankees, bro. They're supposed to have the best doctors. They're in New York with all of the doctors and hospital. I don't know. It's stupid to me. Peter's in Wilbraham, Massachusetts on the fan. Hello, Peter.
What's going on? I want to start off by saying, like, I mean, I think you're completely right. The Yankees mismanaged this whole injury thing with Volpe. It's kind of a disgrace. But, like, I got to ask, do you think if this guy was healthy, he would be a difference maker on this team? Like, an actual difference maker? Because I'm talking, prior to his injury, he wasn't really playing difference maker.
Did he ever have that many errors? Did he ever have that much of a problem fielding routine ground balls, throwing the ball to first base? Like, that was irregular this year. Now, I know he struggled at the plate, but he won a gold glove. He played good defense, and that's why we accepted him being, you know, a 200 hitter, a barely 700 OPS, not even.
Exactly. You know, that just goes back to the mismanagement of Cashman and Boone and these guys. That's why I think Boone's got to go. If I'm a reporter, I'm asking Cashman, maybe, did it ever cross your mind, maybe new coaching, not just, you know, fire the first base coach? Because that's what he does.
Yeah.
Like, maybe the higher man. Like, I mean,
It's nothing. Yeah, it's firing Travis Chapman is nothing. And honestly, firing Harkey, who has been there forever, like, what message is that sending? I think it's just sending a message that, like, there's no lifetime contracts, but Cashman has one. Thanks for the call, Peter. 888-808-1019. And you wonder why there are Yankee fans that hate the organization. You wonder why there are Yankee fans with legit trust issues. You wonder why there are Yankee fans that say, I haven't watched, I don't go to the stadium. They're never going to win anything with Cashman and Boone. Let's go to another Peter. Peter in Lawrence on the Fan. How you doing?
Hey, Keith. How are you? I agree with you. And I have two questions. Is Brad Ausmus's roster spot as a coach,
bench coach
secure, or are they going to get rid of him too? And how far off is George Lombard Jr. from possible contention?
Thanks for the call, Peter. There was an article that I pulled up from the summer where, you know, Brad Ausmus used to be a manager in Major League Baseball. And this article from August says, Brad Ausmus deemed Yankees potential long-term option at manager, easy pick to replace Aaron Boone. So there's some thought that he's, you know, sitting there and waiting, that, like, he's learning right under Aaron Boone. He's learning the organization, and that if they do move away from Aaron Boone in 2 years, it could be Brad Ausmus. I would assume his seat is safe. I would assume his job is safe, but I don't know. Maybe they think they can do better there. Changing Brad Ausmus doesn't change a thing, though. he's not a difference maker at all. Joe out on Long Island is on the Fan next. What you thinking about Joe?
Yo, what up, Keith? So you ALDS out in the bleachers, but that's old news. We're talking now. What do you think about getting Tyreek?
Scooble?
Yeah, Scooble. What do you think?
Yeah, give me him. Give me Paul Skeens. Give me, oh, no, George Springer with a dinger. George Springer just goes deep to center field at 6'2".
George Springer loves killing the Yankees.
Yeah, he's turning it on now. George Kirby, they got to take him out. He's batting practice. They are whopping him. Tarek Skubal.
Tarek Skubal, pitching. We need pitching. Our pitching's great already, but pitching.
You can never have too much pitching. Give me him and get me Paul Skeens. Thanks for the call, Joe. I mean, if he's out there, Brian Cashman should be on the phone. If he's out there, they should offer Spencer Jones. He's one of the best, if not the best, in the game. He's the type of guy that can win you a series, because he's not giving up anything. He's striking out 15 guys. I would never take him out in a do-or-die game. I'm letting him go until he can't go anymore. Now, George Kirby, they need to take out. They're not going to, though. He's down 4 runs. You got to wear it at this point. Try and hold it at some point. I don't get this last out. Get out of the fourth. But look at that. The Blue Jays are alive. We will get back to the Volpe conversation, but I have a guest scheduled for right now, coming up at 9:20, my guy Pat Ragazzo, who had the scoop on the Mets and them hiring Correa to be their next maybe guy in waiting, maybe their next bench coach manager in waiting type guy in the organization, Kai Correa, a young guy. So we're gonna talk to Pat about that, and we'll mix in a little bit of the Mets. And I don't know, I think Evan is gonna fire up a Rico Bronya at some point tonight. So we'll get the Mets conversation in, but trust me, we are going to come. Yeah, the Rico Bronya is scheduled for 9:15. Look at Evan. Evan scheduled his Rico Bronya right as I bring in Pat Ragazzo from Sports Illustrated to talk Mets. Awesome. Let's get it. Let's take this break. If you're on hold to talk Volpe, I'm telling you, stay there, because we're going to come right back to this conversation around 9:30.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Did you know your credit card points and miles can lose value to inflation? Credit card companies often reduce the redemption value of your points and miles. Now, imagine a credit card with rewards that can grow in value. With the Gemini credit card, you can earn Bitcoin or one of over 50 other cryptos instantly with no annual fee. Every swipe at the store or gas pump earns you instant rewards deposited straight to your account. Plus, sign up now for a $200 Bitcoin bonus to kickstart your rewards. Visit Gemini.com/card today. Check out the link in the description for more information on rates and fees. Again, if you're looking to invest in Bitcoin but don't know where to start, the Gemini credit card makes it easy.
The Gemini credit card is issued by WebBank. In order to qualify for the $200 crypto intro bonus, you must spend $3,000 in your first 90 days. Terms apply. Some exclusions apply to instant rewards in which rewards are deposited when the transaction posts. This content is not investment advice, and trading crypto involves risk. For more details on rates, fees, and other cost information, see rates and fees. The Gemini credit card may not be used to make gambling-related purchases.
Hey, it's Boomer
and Geo.
Boomer and Geo is both a radio show and a podcast. You can find us anytime on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your pods.
Catch the full episode, listen by individual hour, or jump straight to the highlights. Just open up your favorite podcast app, search Boomer and Geo, and hit the follow button to get every minute of the show your way and on your time.
Brian, thank you very much for coming on today. What's up? How are you?
I'm doing all right, guys. How about yourself?
Excellent. Let me start with the manager, who is a good manager. You said that as well on the press conference. But I wonder, Joe Torre was here for 12 years. Joe Girardi was here for 10 years. Is there an expiration on the amount of time the same voice can be heard in the room? And was that a thought at all in the days after losing Game 4 to Toronto of moving on?
I mean, if I felt that there was a problem with his influence, connectivity, responding to him or him responding to things via them, then that's a different, conversation we could be having, but I don't feel that. So, I just think that winning is the goal, but it's not a given. It's something we're trying to obviously push through again. In his case, it would be the first time I've won with Girardi and I've won with Torre. They were different teams, that they had. Some teams that they had were more than capable that didn't punch through that people thought were good enough, and others did. It's just not easy. As simple as that. But listen, if I felt that there was a disconnect between manager and players, then that'd be a different conversation.
Very important question I want to ask you, because I know callers say this all the time, but they're callers, and I may say this, or talk show hosts may say this, but it's different when it comes from legends. Alex Rodriguez and Derek Jeter implied and basically said that decisions in-game are coming from the front office and are not being made by Aaron Boone. Is that true, not true? How do you respond to that?
Yeah, I mean, it's not true, clearly. Appreciate you asking so I can clarify. And they don't know. Clearly, they don't know. I know that DJ said that. I don't know what he meant by it. He did say he doesn't have inside knowledge when he said it, but he did say it for whatever reason. And I think that's the boogaboo that people get to throw out there when they got nothing else to throw. Essentially he agrees with me that Aaron Boone's a good manager. This is Derek's commentary, and I agree with him. And then there's always the boogeyman of other people are making the calls. Analytics. People like to throw that too, and none of that's accurate. At the end of the day, you put Joe Torre on a deposition, you put Joe Girardi under a deposition, or you put Aaron Boone under a deposition. I've never picked a lineup. We've never picked a lineup. We don't tell them who to play. We don't tell them who to pitch, whether it's the pen or the rotation. We do have conversations like every organization, about what's best at times, in our opinion, their opinion. They'll ask us various different things, and that's about process and setups. But in the end of the day, they have the power of the lineup and in game, and even in game, to remind fans out there, it's not like the NFL where and TQ would know this. I don't, but I think the NFL, that these guys in the press box are connected, looking at offenses and defenses, and they're connected to with their headphones to the field level coaches and getting feedback back and forth, et cetera. That's not that doesn't happen in baseball. The dugout lines are all recorded by MLB and followed because of those cheating scandals, and monitored by MLB securities, and no one's calling the dugout. No one's making calls. If guys were making calls in front of players, they would talk to it and speak to it, and it just isn't the case. So it's just a sad, you know, throwaway comments for people to make that don't really know.
Did you, I don't know your relationship currently with Alex or Derek, but did you call them, text them, and just clarify, or is it just something you don't feel the need to talk to them about?
I did call Derek right away. I was like, "Hey, man, well, you know, out of curiosity, because you know, Derek, I think would represent to you because I'm a pretty strong straight shooter with everybody I deal with." And so I was like, "Derek, you know, I'd never lie to you." I was like, "Do you think this? Do you believe this?" And he said, "No. If you watched," he said, "I said I have no internal knowledge of this." I was like, "I know, but you said what you said, and that's how it played." And he said, "Well, I feel Boone gets too much blame, so just, you know, he just." From his perspective, was trying to blend it without putting meaning to what he meant. He didn't really tell me after that what he meant, but outside of pointing out that I did say I had no internal, you know, information there. And so then I just said, well, for my edification, I'm going to just share that at no time have we ever done the lineups, that at no time has anybody dictated from any chair other than the manager's chair who to play. And you could lean on Girardi, you can lean on Mooney, you can lean on Torrey about all that stuff. And those are the facts. Those are the truth. I said, the only thing I care about, I said in the press conference today, is to have people in place that have good, strong processes, do the work, you know, are prepared, you know, playing different, you know, running through the different scenarios that could come at them in game when, the, you know, because, you know, when the bullets are flying, they're flying fast and the reaction times are slow. So you need to be prepped for all that stuff. And you need to think through your lineups and what you're doing with them and where you're slotting guys and why and who to play this day versus that day. All the stuff you dissect on the radio and they do in social media and the fans love to get into. And, but, you know, manager's chair or the coach's chair, you know, they have access to a lot more information. And I actually, and this day will come at some point, I'm not saying I would go into the broadcasting side, but, you know, I have a different perspective where I see things playing out. And if it doesn't make sense, there's usually some other underlying information that's not public, whether it's in the NFL or the NBA or MLB or whatever. I'm like, you know, I'm speculating in my mind going, I bet you there's something here that they don't know,
right?
You know, that everybody else is going back and forth, managers covering, head coaches covering, or they don't want to give. There's various reasons, personal reasons not to say, but again, that I think that when a lot of times this stuff happens, it just plays out inaccurately. You get paid to have an opinion, but you don't have access to all the information. And sometimes you give a good opinion, and then sometimes you give a really lousy one. In A-Rod's case, he didn't talk about, you know, that I heard anything about manager decisions being made from the front office, because that's false. But he did say stuff about roster construction, which had, you know, doesn't make any sense, because, I mean, first of all, they both picked us to win the World Series 48 hours before we got eliminated. You know, one, we're getting eliminated. You had us eliminated by the Cubs, is my understanding, and then A-Rod by the Dodgers. And then 48 hours, that's the one thing about October, which I feel bad for managers and organizations alike, because, you know, it's so fleeting, the success and the, you know, it's like one day they're getting praised and supported and everybody believes in it and it looks great, and then the next day you lose and it's like, you're dumb and you're idiots and what were they doing? And so you get picked to win the World Series on Fox, and then you get slaughtered, the, you know, 48 hours later by Fox, by the same people that yeah, they played here. And, you know, A-Rod had a great career. He punched through with one championship, and, you know, Derek has a lot more than that. And, you know, they're obviously respected people, but it doesn't mean their opinions are always correct every time they throw them.
Brian, Aaron Boone mentioned today he still did not believe the shoulder negatively impacted Anthony Volpe's play. And about 20 minutes later, you admitted that you did believe it affected his play. Is there a disconnect with Anthony Volpe between you and Aaron Boone?
No. I clarified that. I said I don't think Aaron Boone had an access to Dr. Chris Ahmad that I did. So I had a conversation with Chris about the surgery and the complications. It was more complicated than the MRI would have revealed. And I can't speak. I don't think Aaron had access to that information. So I choose, and it doesn't mean we both could be right. He could be like, hey, cause he was dealing with the player and, you know, on the ground floor here and the communications about how he's feeling. And I'm three floors up and, you know, getting the information in the trainings reports and then my more recent information coming right from Dr. Mod post-surgery. And again, I can't speak if I had that or not. So I choose to believe that, yeah, it did affect him. You know, it was more than we thought, and it was more than, you know, and again, I think all things could be accurate. I think in season, we did not believe, I know we're accused of underplaying his injury, but it was based on, you know, his communication on how he was feeling every step of the way. And at times when he was struggling, I would even ask the question, you know, hey man, is your shoulder bothering you? And the trainer would tell me, like, I just talked to him this yesterday. And he said he's never felt better. It's got no issues whatsoever. And his physical testing is coming back good and blah, blah, blah. And so you roll. But you know, the performance was, you know, certainly up and down and, you know, lesser than even he's, you know, would have been capable of, it, in my opinion. And then after the season, when you, if you asked me in June if we had a surgery coming, it wouldn't have been on the table. Now we did have a surgery, and it was worse after you open him up on the non-throwing shoulder than what you still need for swinging a bat. And, you know, the worse than the MRIs reflect. So you treat the patient, then they treat, and, you know, and then you treat the MRI, and then ultimately you still have issues, you open them up. And so I choose now to lean into, I think it definitely had to have an effect on this season. And I don't think there's a disconnect with me and Booney. I don't know if he actually had the access to Ahmad's information. I heard his presser before you, but in fairness, I didn't talk to Booney about what Ahmad talked to me about. There's only so much time in the day when we're doing all this heavy lifting. So, you know, that could be on me.
Now, when it comes to Volpe, and you mentioned asking him about the pain, we had a couple years ago the Anthony Rizzo concussion situation, and then this year, of course, lighter for a couple days with whatever was going on with his kneecap and the forearm with Clark Schmidt. Do you guys think you're putting a little too much trust in what the players are telling you pain tolerance-wise in terms of how these injuries are being handled?
No, I don't. I think that's the way it's done anywhere and everywhere, and we have an excellent medical team, and we are in the area of New York where we have the greatest access to the best doctors in the world. And so like anything else, medicine is a very difficult world. We're dealing with alpha dogs that are playing at the highest athletic level you can possibly play. And in many, if not most cases, their level of pain tolerance is off the chart. And so what I would feel, or you might feel, which could be radiating, it doesn't even impact him in any way, shape, or form. And even on physical testing, you know, that these athletic trainers get, you know, they go to school, they get, you know, accredited with, you know, passing all these different classes, and you know, move guys into certain, you know, movements. And if it elicits these responses, there's weakness or problems of concern, depending on what area, and helps them pinpoint, you know, their level of risk this is and what this might be. But if they're strong as bulls and they pass through that, and, you know, obviously you do MRIs that don't necessarily reveal things, and off you go. But I remember years and years ago, we had a reliever, a pitcher named Humberto Sanchez, and, you know, he had had elbow complaints. They kept repeating MRIs, Now, clearly the MRIs today are probably a lot more sophisticated than all the way back then. And he was a local kid from the Bronx. And finally, you know, after rehab, failed rehabs, et cetera, you know, numerous MRIs, everything done, you know, you react, it's time to open them up. And then they open up, there's no ligament. He didn't have a ligament. It was blown out, and it was scar tissue that had revealed, looked like a ligament per MRI. And so sometimes you don't find out what you need to find out till, you know, the end result is let's open them up and find out what we're dealing with, because everything else is not, it doesn't, something's wrong and you can't figure it out. So
what specifically was the surgery for Volpe, and what timeline are you looking at?
He had a labral repair on his non-throwing shoulder, and he will not, I think it's no swing for 4 months, if I remember right. I'm trying to, yeah, because we have obviously Rodon as well.
Right.
No swing for 4 months, and it's, you know, really 6 months between that and Bacon and the rehab and all that stuff. So, you know, he's not going to start the season on time. He'll be sometime in April, if not early May.
Will you look at the shortstop position during the offseason and be opportunistic on possibly bringing in an everyday shortstop? Or do you look at that position as it's Volpe's when he's back in early May, late April?
We'll see. I mean, I still feel like, you know, Volpe is our guy and that, you know, he's better. There's a better version of what you saw this past year, but at the same time, we'll go through our process regardless and see what, you know, what's available in the marketplace for all aspects that, you know, and we'll just compare it to what we have and go from there. But, you know, my default is I think we have a shortstop. He just won't be our shortstop opening day. And I will definitely look at everything and anything. That's what we always do.
How would you label his first 3 years in the major leagues? Disappointment, below average, average? Like, you tell me, how would you label what you've gotten out of him 3 years into his career?
Some good times and then some difficult times. I talked about it in the press conference today, whether it's, you know, kind of equating it to these NFL quarterbacks, you know, some are become busts and don't live up to it. Some, you know, take more time, you know, they're supposed to be the franchise, you know, and then Baker Mayfield moves on or Daniel Jones moves on or, you know, Zach Wilson moves on or whomever.
Zach's not going to be good, Brian. Yeah. Don't start with me about this. Well, Zach Wilson stinks. Come on now.
I'm throwing names out there. It doesn't mean they're accurate. But bottom line, he's a 24-year-old first-round pick that had a lot of success. A lot of belief is there. He is wired properly. He's not the city isn't too big for him. That's not part of reasons why he had struggles this year. I personally still think without, you know, going through our pro scouting assessments, getting all our coaches' feedback and everything else that we would normally do, I still believe that this player can positively impact us on a consistent basis as we move forward. But we'll still go through that. And it doesn't matter in theory what I think. I'm an open-minded individual. It matters what I'm going to be exposed to by a lot of people I respect. It'll either reinforce my personal opinion at this point or it'll have me pivot and decide something differently. But I believe, you know, he's worth believing in and worth, you know, walking through fire with, notwithstanding, obviously, you know, having a difficult 2025.
Luke Weaver implied during the Toronto series that there were, quote, internal factors for his struggles. What do you think those internal factors were, and are you interested in a return with Luke Weaver?
We haven't gone through our pro scouting stuff. Yeah, he's speaking to I can't talk about, you know, what's moving forward since we haven't talked about it, but he was a great pitcher for us last year, more struggling this year, and what he was talking to is pitch dipping that, you know, was communicated with him throughout the entire year, and it just, you know, it's not easy. It's easy to identify stuff that other teams can pick up, and it's not necessarily as easy to get them fixed, even though you know what they are, and you partner with the player, and you try to walk through it, try to find different adjustments to, you know, eradicate it, and unfortunately, that was not a successful venture, but that's what he was speaking to.
We're talking to Brian Cashman, general manager of the New York Yankees. Will you make a qualifying offer to Trent Grisham?
Not sure. Fair question. We'll walk through our process and see. I think usually those are around, I think the number is probably about $22 million. He had an amazing year for us, you know, gave us more than we ever could have expected. You know, we liked the player. We traded for him with Soto. And then obviously, despite not playing much in 24, we still tendered him a contract because we valued him and felt there was roles here for him, but the role he wound up playing in the end was so much more important and impact was so much greater than we would have bargained for. So bouquets go his way. He had a hell of a year, and timing was great for it too. He's a free agent, so, you know, that'll certainly be a decision we'll be forced to make sooner than later.
How do you decide? Because I know, just as a baseball fan, and no offense to Trent, because he had a great year, I look at him and say, he's not that player. I mean, I look at the rest of his career. How do you make that decision on a guy who was one player his entire career and then in a contract year plays like an all-star? How do you decide who's the real Trent Grisham?
Yeah, fair question. I know that we have targeted Trent for years because we thought there was more in the tank offensively. We thought he had power. We thought he had plate discipline. He was above average defender. So we had tried to acquire him for a number of years, then finally got him as packaged with that Soto deal. And because of our ballpark and, you know, the lift in his swing, we thought this place would be a you know, we could actually get some extra mileage out of the bat than he had already provided. But what took place this year, in fairness to anybody having those type of evaluations, nobody had that coming. It was an avalanche of good stuff. So, yeah, those are the tough things you got to wrestle with. You know, was this past year more indicative of what he is moving forward? You know, Trent, you know, has been a guy with a great reputation in the game and then had a chance to run things out in this particular arena, you know, and maybe he's unlocked some things. It looked different this year, right out of the gate. And I remember Booney, you know, kind of saying some degree he was his pick to click this year. It was like he liked what he was seeing with the ball off the bat in the spring, and that carried for the next 6 months. And unfortunately, didn't carry in October. But again, real great appreciations, you know, for him and a lot of the guys that, you know, produced in such a significant way to have us navigate out of, you know, 2024. And, you know, we lost a lot in free agency and trying to remake ourselves and find a different way. And a lot of guys allowed that to happen, whether it was imports or guys from within and stepping up. And he was certainly one of them.
We're talking to Brian Cashman. Do you, and a lot was made during the Toronto series about this because they never struck out. Do you believe that you guys strike out too much? Is that something you would want to focus on and think that's kind of a formula to postseason success to cut down on swing and misses?
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely something. Like, for instance, you know, I thought we redid, you know, our offense, you know, when we lost the big man in Juan Soto to free agency. You know, that's a lot of offense that was coming out of our lineup. You know, and so how are we going to replace that? And so like essentially a third of our lineup was new this year. We import Bellinger. We import, you know, right below our noses, Trent Grisham kind of fills in. Then you have the combination of Goldschmidt and Ben Rice. That's three guys out of the nine. And then eventually in the second half, we acquire Ryan McMahon. So I'd certainly try to get more athletic, more explosive on the base pass. And, you know, give us a lot of different other weapons to deploy, not, you know, to make us in theory better. And so anyway, when the dust settles, like, you know, I think the back of the lineup, I didn't expect maybe, you know, Volpe to have the years at the back of the lineup that the year that he had, or Wells, you know, I think the year he had, you know, was a second, you know, his sophomore season. And so those things kind of became more volatile at the back of the lineup than, I certainly didn't game plan on that. So yes, I think strikeouts are a problem. We always try to eradicate them, but at the end of the day, that's what we wound up with. It was still the best version of what, we felt we could deploy, and we'll continue to try to be better at it.
Are you open, maybe not this year or next year or whenever, over the course of this Judge contract, to consider moving him to first base?
I mean, I think we're always open to do what we think is best. We signed Goldschmidt to be our first baseman, right? And then by the end of it, he was only facing left-handers, you know? And Rice took his job because Rice emerged. So, you know, I think that we're always open to do what, you know, what is in our best interest for the team. And, and so obviously that's not a subject matter that needs to be in play today. But, you know, it's a long contract, and at some point, you know, it might be a different conversation.
That injury doesn't make you think about it? Just I know it. He's not going to need surgery, thank God. But did that give any thought of, hey, you know, plays first base, there's certainly a lot less throws. Is that a thought at all?
Not based on all the information we've been provided. He should be healed up. This shouldn't be a prerequisite to reoccurring again. It won't mean it doesn't happen, but he's not more susceptible moving forward once this flexor tendon was healed, that it's now all of a sudden not something hanging by a thread. It's not something that he is at a higher risk because he just went through this. So right now that's not a consideration.
You could be honest with me. Was there any joy in seeing Juan Soto miss the playoffs this season?
No, because, you know, I've been around long enough to know that you start playing those "I wish this somewhere else" negative, and that those wins usually will blow back on top of you as well. So, you know, I hadn't had a chance outside of when we went head-to-head with the Mets. They had a good team. You know, I know they got a good manager because he worked here. They got a good owner. They got a good general manager. They got a lot of good stuff going on. And sometimes baseball, I mean, it's more a reflection of how difficult baseball really is, no matter how good you are. You know, it's just the 162 is, man, it's long, and it could be rather difficult. You got to stay healthy. I thought, you know, I know from afar watching, they had that one kid, had two guys go down with injuries out of the rotation that I thought was really a problem. The kid they brought in from Anaheim, Griffin Canning. And then McGill.
Yep.
Once those hit, then the dominoes. I mean, you remember what happened with, you know, Phil, and I remember what happened with us.
Yeah.
And we went into a swoon this summer bad. You know, first we started taking on water with our bullpen going down. Now guys that were being asked to step up in higher leverage roles, and they weren't necessarily able to do it. And, you know, maybe that coincided when Devin was struggling out of the pen on top of it. And then maybe the offense, we were starting to deal with some issues all at the same time. You know, whatever. Well, you know, we lose Warren to, you know, to an injury. Next, you know, we're taking on water. Doesn't matter how on paper good we look. And it's just how can you survive stuff when it comes. You know, Booney talks about it all the time. Like, hey, adversity's coming after us, and we need to be prepared for it. And, but when it hits, man, it you know, yeah. you're going against other, you know, you're in prize fights every series. I mean, the postseason's a, you know, a short series, but 162 games in season is a bunch of series that you run up against another prize fighter that you got to be in the ring and you got to find a way and to get through it and stuff. But I thought those injuries that hit really started a domino effect, and because they had a good thing going early, but you can get derailed and it could be you know. You know, one injury, one play, and next year your whole narrative starts to change. And that's why baseball is such a beautiful sport, but it's also such a difficult sport.
No doubt. Brian, we appreciate it, man. Thank you for making time for us.
All right. Thanks so much.
Thank you, man. Brian Cashman, general manager of the New York Yankees, who has to run. Otherwise, we'd go over the entire roster for an hour and a half.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
Did you know your credit card points and miles can lose value to inflation? Credit card companies often reduce the redemption value of your points and miles. Now, imagine a credit card with rewards that can grow in value. With the Gemini credit card, you can earn Bitcoin or one of over 50 other cryptos instantly with no annual fee. Every swipe at the store or gas pump earns you instant rewards deposited straight to your account. Plus, sign up now for a $200 Bitcoin bonus to kickstart your rewards. Visit Gemini.com/card today. Check out the link in the description for more information on rates and fees. Again, if you're looking to invest in Bitcoin but don't know where to start, the Gemini credit card makes it easy.
The Gemini credit card is issued by WebBank. In order to qualify for the $200 crypto intro bonus, you must spend $3,000 in your first 90 days. Terms apply. Some exclusions apply to instant rewards in which rewards are deposited when the transaction posts. This content is not investment advice, and trading crypto involves risk. For more details on rates, fees, and other cost information, see rates and fees. The Gemini credit card may not be used to make gambling-related purchases.
Hey, it's Boomer.
And Geo.
Boomer and Geo is both a radio show and a podcast. You can find us anytime on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your pods.
Catch the full episode, listen by individual hour, or jump straight to the highlights. Just open up your favorite podcast app, search Boomer and Geo, and hit the follow button to get every minute of the show your way and on your time.
Call today, of course, Brian Cashman, Aaron Boone, who were addressing the media. The first time both of them speaking since the season ended. Obviously, Boone was there right after the game, you know, a week ago when the Yanks were eliminated. But the year-end press conference, and I got to tell you, you know, we had the little BT and Sal, Brian Cashman press conference bingo. Dude, this was like, what was it, Hoffa with Geraldo there with the disappointment looking for the save for the vault, and it was nothing.
There was nothing. I expected fireworks. Nobody's going to ask Brian Cashman or Booney to respond to what Jeter and A-Rod said. Scathing remarks. So you didn't get any of that. You did get a little bit of the trust our process. We believe in Volpe. Had a really good team. Full support of ownership. And there was one moment where Cashman alluded to the Astros cheating them out of the World Series. He did say that a little bit later on. But a different type of tone that I thought we were going to get from Brian Cashman.
And you got Spencer Jones as well.
Spencer Jones.
That was brought up by... That was the last question. All right, so my takeaway with Cash as today, you know, he was definitely very pensive, as he often is, you know, a code for rambling. You know, he's throwing it on and on and on. He was very measured, didn't say anything, you know, really off messaging today. I thought he'd be more combative. I thought it would be more spicy. I thought it'd be more fiery, and I got to tell you there, Sal, for the first time, I thought Brian Cashman sounded tired. Like, I'm watching him, and I'm sitting there saying, I'm not saying he's not capable of doing the job, even though I, you know, would have moved on a couple of years ago, over due respect. It didn't sound like he had a lot of oomph in his delivery today. Now, he's not a comedian up on stage. Mm-hmm. You know, he's not some musical act that you pay a couple hundred bucks a ticket to go and watch. He's a general manager. So I don't need some incredibly over-the-top, nutty presentation to make me feel better, because the only thing that matters is what they do during the offseason. And now they've got some injuries that they've got to obviously work around, as we talked about. But he just seemed, to me, he seemed tired.
Well, I mean, maybe he's just... Obviously, he's disappointed with the same result and maybe thinking, well, we've tried to do this thing a few different ways and just nothing has been good enough. But we built a team that won 94 games. Toronto had our number, couldn't get past Toronto. Maybe in his mind, he believes it would have been a different result had they were able to spell the Blue Jays. Maybe they beat the Mariners, whatever the case may be. Maybe they go in the... I can't tell you exactly what he's thinking other than it's been the same thing for a long time. They believe that they build a team that's good enough to get through the postseason and go win a World Series, but yet they keep falling short in the postseason, which I believe they believe is a crapshoot. So you could, like, he basically said we had as good a chance as anybody going in. We tried to upgrade the team the best that we could. We did. We'll do it again. With ownership gives us the resources to go out there and put together a team to compete legitimately for a World Series every year. It just doesn't always happen. Unfortunately, it hasn't happened since 2009. It's a long time. And we do believe, like, there's a reason for it. It's not just a crapshoot. The way the Yankees constructed their team has not been good enough. That's for me. And I don't know if he's going to agree with that or not, but we've seen the same thing over and over again.
Yeah, I think the only thing that was different for me this year is that it felt more like a team that actually could get to and win a World Series. You know, so many of these versions of the Yankees, I mean, if you know anything about baseball and you're able to take off the fandom, the hat for a moment, right, and look at things objectively, you know, most Yankee fans understood where this team was for a big chunk. And I don't just mean, you know, post-championship 09, because there were times where I'm like, all right, you know, the baby bombers, here we go.
Yeah.
But I'm talking about the last few iterations, outside of last year, of course, when they got to the World Series. I'm like, this team doesn't have it. Are you kidding me?
Well, let me ask you something. Do you think the Blue Jays are a better team?
I think top to bottom, their lineup is more potent. A better team? No, I don't.
You don't
think only because of the starting pitching. Now, I know that Fried got rocked and Rodon wasn't very good, and Bichette didn't play. Like, honestly, like, A to Z, one, I don't. I think it's close.
I don't know how you could say that. I thought this was a layup. Definitively, the Blue Jays are a better team. By any match, dude, they played them at that. They owned them all year
long. Yeah, I know. That's why I hesitated. They smoked them.
Even the Yankees would admit the Blue Jays were a better team. So then my counter to that would be, why? How is it possible that Toronto, like, if I'm Hal, I go to Brian and Booney and be like, okay, you told me this was the best team that we've had since 2018. I give you the resources on par with the top in the sport, maybe not as much as the other teams do, but you know, right there with the Mets, Dodgers, whatever. How come the Blue Jays were able to build a better team than what we have here? That's what I want to know. Or if you don't think that they're better, whatever, fair enough, semantics maybe. But
definitely better at certain things, like putting the ball in play, and that matters.
How come they were able to beat us in the regular season, different versions of our team? They beat us up in the regular season and dominated us in the postseason. Why was that the case? That's what I would want an answer to. It can't just be, well, we got owned by the Blue Jays.
That's random.
We'll try to do it again.
That's fair.
Next year.
That's very, very fair. By the way, you mentioned Hal, right? So Cashman, here's what he said with his conversations with Hal after the Yankees got eliminated. Quote, he's frustrated. He's disappointed. He wants a championship. He wants one for him and his family. They believe many times we had a chance to do something, and he knows opportunity lost for all of us. So
generally, Cashman, you know, when he talks of how it's about support, the resources, hey, bring something to me, I'll let you know if we can do it. Generally, he does most things. That is where I would like to hear from Hal. It doesn't change the result, but if the general manager is telling me that he's frustrated, he's disappointed, I think at some point Hal's got to communicate that to the fans. You're not a day-to-day liaison to the fans. That's Boone. Or a periodical liaison, which is Cashman, right, with the quarterly updates during the season, if you will. Trade deadline, whatever, spring training. But you are the big guy. Like, this is your team, and this is your checkbook, and it is your right. I know it's not his personality. I get that. I don't mean he's going to be a raving lunatic like his pops, but you could parachute in and let us know what you're thinking about getting mopped by Toronto.
I think you just hit on the main theme of this whole thing. Like, today's day was, okay, let's hear from Boone, let's hear from Cashman, and really we didn't get much other than the injury updates and a little bit here or there. But really, what can they say? We already know what they think because we've heard from them repeatedly. We need to hear from the guy who's making the decision to continue employing Cashman and Boone. Not saying that they deserve to be fired or whatever, but just not changing anything and still expecting a different result.
Yeah.
What does he think? Cashman's tried it different ways. They've had different versions of the team. Plan B, tried for Soto. None of it's worked. So what does Hal think of the results year after year after year, falling short of winning a World Series?
It's such a simple question, but it speaks to everything that the Yankee fan deserves it and would want to know. Like, if Hal's up there, you know, and whether it's Andy or anybody else, who Joel, you know, covers the sport for their livelihood, you could frame it however you want. But here's how I would frame it respectfully. You know, Hal, you've been doing this for a long time, and you've given Yankee fans a lot of good moments with teams that are really, really good. You haven't won since 2009, yet you have the same general manager. And, you know, you've had the manager for almost a decade here. Why are they still... Or however you want, but you've got to...
What are you going to do to change?
Yeah, well, you got to put him on record why he believes, and again, my focus is more on the general manager. Hal, why do you believe that Brian is still the guy? The sport's changed. Things have evolved. Has he evolved enough with the sport? It's kind of, outside of this year a little bit, you've kind of lost the same way. Strikeouts, right, errors, shoddy base. Again, a little bit different this year, to be fair. But it's been a similar ouster. It's been, when the Yankees lose, it's never pretty. Like, the Dodgers absolutely destroyed them. The Yankees threw up all over themselves last year. The Astros in 2022, Yankees looked like a JV team. They had a 590 OPS. They struck out, I think it was 75 times in the series. It was gross. So they kind of lose the same way. And honestly, Hal is accepting of it.
Right. This wasn't some grueling five-game series where they lost in the ninth inning and you just be like, yeah. You know, that's unfortunate, a little bad luck. They got outclassed by Toronto all year long. Sports Talk on WFAN is presented by Paramount Plus. Can't count on much, but you can always count on Sundays with the NFL on CBS and Paramount Plus. Watch your local NFL game live every Sunday all season long. Visit ParamountPlus.com/NFL to get started today. We heard from Aaron Boone starting at noon and then Brian Cashman. And my main takeaway, man, the Yankees are banged up before opening day even happens here. I had no idea that Volpe wasn't going to be ready for opening day, so that's one. Carlos Rodon, I don't know if anybody knew that he was having a procedure that's going to have him out opening day. Now, it doesn't seem like it's going to be significant beyond that, but still. And Gerrit Cole's not going to be ready for opening day. So already, before we get started here, before we could digest what happened this season, opening day impacted for the Yankees next year.
Which obviously complicates or clouds what they do in terms of player pursuit this offseason. Yeah, that's the theme for me. There's some other ones we'll get into here. So listen, this is a ray of good news. No surgery for Judge, so at least something good. Cole's on target, although probably not for opening day, but on target in terms of when he had the surgery. The Volpe thing, I want to get back to that in a minute. The Rodon thing was out of left field for me. I didn't hear that once. So he's not going to throw for 8 weeks, which isn't a big deal at this point, but more late April, early May. So Yankees very well, depending upon when Cole tracks back and when Rodon comes back. Schmidt's not going to be back until August. The Yankees are going to be down a few starting pitchers. All right, to start the first month or so. The Volpe stuff. See, to me, the biggest issue is, yeah, it's not great that he's going to miss four, can't hit for 4 months and can't dive for six. But that's not even what I'm thinking. It's not ideal, but the biggest issue is that he has to overhaul his hitting approach. And when you can't swing a bat for 4 months, I want somebody to tell me how Anthony Volpe, whenever he gets back, whether it's 2 months in or 3 months in or 1 month in, how is Anthony Volpe going to be an improved hitter
when he can't work at all this winter on hitting.
Yeah, and even if he doesn't need to change his approach, the idea that he wouldn't have a normal offseason is going to be a negative to begin with. You're talking about a player who most fans want to move on from anyway. You heard Brian Cashman double down and say, we believe in Volpe, basically, that we know it's a bad thing for us that he's not going to be our opening day shortstop, which makes me think they're not going to go out there and get somebody else. I personally would move on. Not saying you get a jettison Volpe. Maybe you move him to second base eventually. But I don't know how you could count on this season going into it, even without the injury or the surgery. But now with that, to your point, like, how could you trust on Volpe being what you thought he was going to be?
You can't. There's two issues at play here. Number one, the young player is not healthy. Number two, the young player is really just nowhere good enough to be the starting shortstop right now with the bat on a team that's trying to win a championship. But if you can't, if you can't put any work in during the winter, or during the winter, you're just not going to be coming. You're not going to come back and improve players. So think about it like this: take Mitchell Robinson, all right, who is a horrendous free throw shooter and probably always will be for the rest of his life. But just imagine if he had an elbow or a shoulder labrum surgery and he literally could not take a free throw all off season. How's he getting better? He's not. And I got to tell you, I actually heard something a little different from Cashman pertaining to Volpe. I heard the first flinch. It was early, and it was three words, but it was never this up in the air. And then he went back, and he kind of did reinforce the thought that they like him and all the good stuff. But the first question when he was asked about Volpe, hey, is Anthony your starting shortstop in 2026? And the first three words out of his mouth were, I think so. Never like, he's going to be terrific.
But could that have been about the injury, or we knew definitively he's not going to be ready for opening day?
That's a good question. I didn't take it as depending upon the medical return or the healing process. I took it. Now, this is my interpretation. Could be off on this, that there's just a little self-doubt. Let's be honest, in the organization, I mean, nobody was as cocky and as combative as Cashman was a year ago defending Volpe. And the first thing when he says, I think so. And even if Cashman meant it just medically and not from a performance perspective, it doesn't matter anymore because next year's year four.
But he also did excuse his performance a little bit with the injury.
And Boone did not.
Correct.
They were not on the same page with
Volpe. And Cashman was going against what Volpe himself said and what Boone said.
Yes.
Just defending his player. I think it was his soft way of defending Volpe. He can't do it vehemently the way that he did it last year.
He's got
he
no
looked
juice.
Like an idiot. He can't do that. Mm-hmm. But he did still defend. Bottom line is, I would move on from Volpe. They are going to stick with Anthony Volpe. Now, they're going to have to get somebody else in the short term. Is it Caballero? Who knows who's going to play short until he's ready? I can't imagine you going into the season like that, not knowing if and when he's going to come back. And then when he does come back, the uncertainty of it. But I believe that's what they're going to do.
Yeah, I think so, too. Now, listen, I don't think there's any reason to get rid of Anthony Volpe because Anthony Volpe is not due some massive financial commitment. He's still making relative peanuts, you know, compared to other, you know, he's not a star, but other players in baseball. Now,
when I say move on, by the way, I don't mean just...
You don't mean jettison. You mean maybe second base or bench or something like
whatever.
That?
Whatever. You put him down in the minors or work his way back up. I would move on from him being my starting big league shortstop.
Fair enough. I wouldn't yet, but I got you. I don't have many, much room to stand on anymore with that. You know that. Okay. So the thing about... and they were on different pages, and I'm not trying to create drama where there's no drama, but they said two very different things with Volpe, Boone and Cash. I do think, to be fair to Cashman, the difference with a general manager being in the weeds medically versus Boone, you know, now the medical charts, like Boone's got so many people to worry about in player development and offseason workouts. It's Brian's job, I think, more intimately. So to know what's going on medically, when Brian said that the MRI, and this happens, I don't care how advanced medicine is, this still does happen. When the MRI says one thing, when you slice somebody open, it could be a lot worse than even the best reading of an imaging can tell you. So I think that's what happens. I think it's a little bit middle of the road. Volpe. I think Volpe wanted to keep going. They did the testing to see if he was okay. He was. And then, you know, maybe you dive on it, it flares up again. And then when they went in, they're like, whoa, this is absolutely worse than we thought. And, you know, maybe they now Boone didn't say that. Cashman did. I don't know. It's a little bit of everything, but I think Cashman actually handled that part pretty well.
Well, also both can be true. I mean, you have to acknowledge that at some point it probably impacted his performance. However, it's not an excuse because it's year three and he hasn't been anywhere near as good as he was supposed to be. So I think that both are true to a certain extent. More breaking down the press conferences from Boone and Cashman when we come back. BT and Sal on the Fan.
Well, Brian Cashman will join us coming up at 2:20. He met the media earlier. If you missed it, you can rewind it on the Odyssey app during the midday program. And I listened to everything Aaron said. I listened to everything Brian Cashman said. And there's certainly a lot of things you can take away from it. But I will give you the number one thing that changed my opinion. And that is, I sat here yesterday and over the last few days when discussing the Yankee offseason, one of the things I thought was, wow, you have a surplus of starting pitching. You could deal from a strength. Well, it would have been easy 2 days ago to say, but Evan, pitchers get hurt. Why would you deal from a strength? Well, they're already hurt. Because Carlos Rodon, in news none of us saw coming, needed surgery to clean up some loose bodies in his elbow, mm-hmm. and it was confirmed by both Cashman and Boone, he will not be ready for opening day. It doesn't mean he's missing the season, it doesn't mean he's missing the first half, but he's going to miss the first few weeks of the season, and because it's surgery, you don't actually know if it's just the first few weeks of the season. Combine that with the fact that Gerrit Cole is indeed coming off Tommy John surgery, we already had an idea he wasn't going to be ready for the start of the year, but he's not going to be ready for the start of the year. So I think what this reinforces to me, Sean, is that you need to wrap your arms around the starting pitching that you have and not deal from a strength, but actually keep as much of it as you can because you may need every morsel of it.
Yeah, I agree with you on that front. I think if the Yankees are going to make upgrades to this roster, it will not involve trading, let's say, a Luis Gil or a Will Warren or somebody like that because you are going to need them. Now, the caveat is, I don't think that this changes my approach in the offseason in terms of what additions the Yankees make. You can never have enough starting pitching, of that I have no doubt. But I'm not going out of my way to find another starter reassigned for 3 years, something like that. They are still going to start opening day with four of their baseline starters there, with Warren, with Heal, with Schlittler now, and with Max Fried. Of course, injuries notwithstanding in February or March. Ultimately, I still think Yankee starting pitching is going to be a strength of the 2026 team, but it's going to be a little nerve-wracking out the gates in April.
Yeah, I don't become super aggressive adding starting pitching by any stretch. I just think that now you have to wrap your arms around this.
Sure.
And not say, let's see what Luis Gil could get us on the open market. I floated the idea a few days ago about Carlos Rodon. I'm not even sure what his value would be considering he's coming off of surgery.
Nothing, by the way. Nothing.
Probably. I wouldn't say nothing, but
you're
it's not
take on the last 3 years of that contract and a guy coming off loose bodies?
It's not as high as it was 72 hours ago.
No doubt.
That's what I would tell you. So I think that you look at next year and you say to yourself, wow, okay, coming out of the gate, and this is just assuming everyone gets out of spring training healthy, which is a guarantee that that's not going to be the case. Whether it's the Yankees, the Mets, or any other team in baseball, you've got seven starters that you're penciling in going into spring training, one or two guys getting hurt. So even the four guys that you mentioned, there's no guarantee you're getting out of spring training healthy. So the Yankees are going into next year a little bit behind the eight ball. And Aaron Boone said something that is so true. And I actually been thinking about it the last few days. I'm glad he brought it up. I know we've had our arguments about just get in. The regular season doesn't really matter. Get hot at the right time. Look, I stand by all those comments. But the New York Mets and the New York Yankees had one game change their future. The Mets clearly missed the playoffs by one game. The Yankees missed home field advantage throughout the postseason by one game. And Aaron Boone even admitted when talking earlier today, yeah, when I think back to this season, could I have been more aggressive with my bullpen? Could I have been more creative? Because he knows what I know, what you know. Yes, games in May feel like no big deal. But if one game went differently for the New York Yankees, they're not playing the Red Sox in a best of three.
Right.
They're hosting a best of five against the Toronto Blue Jays. Does that mean that everything goes differently? Maybe. I mean, it's possible. We know the difference it would have made on the Mets. That's different. So it reminds me that we can sit here and say, 2 weeks to begin the year, no biggie. A month to begin the year, no biggie. But the reality is we are coming off baseball seasons in this town in which one game really did change everything.
Yeah, and we always talk about managing for the marathon, not the sprint, but I think this has to be a learning lesson. If you can still learn them 8 years into your managerial career, there's no question. But Evan, I go back to something else they said, which ties into that. I'm not sure it would have made a big difference because had the Yankees advanced here, they were going to keep pitching Carlos Rodon with his loose elbows and loose bodies in his elbow. They were going to keep playing Anthony Volpe, who couldn't hit anymore at short, now knowing he needed the surgery after all. The Yankees effectively were playing two rounds of the playoffs with two pretty key players. Now, we knew Volpe was struggling anyway, with one hand tied behind their back, and they were going to keep going like this?
Yeah, but think about this. Carlos Rodon would have made one fewer start before he made his first playoff
all
start.
Right. Good you point, too. No, good point, too.
Like, things change, and it's just a reminder to me, and I'm kind of learning as this baseball football new revolution continues of all the different playoff teams and the first round bye. Like, I think our views kind of change over the years because we get to see it. It was just a reminder that as much as I, as a baseball fan, minimize the regular season, mm-hmm. both New York teams are a living body example that, no, it actually does matter. If the Yankees win one more game and they're not playing a best of three against the Red Sox, which means Carlos Loose Bodies Rodon doesn't make an extra start,
yep.
and even Max Fried doesn't make an extra start,
yep.
and now the games are in your own building, of course the results could have been different.
Right. And your bullpen doesn't continue to get used like it did in those 3 games.
1,000%. No, so it makes me think going into next year, do we, whether it's the Yankees, Mets, or any other team, almost have to treat each game a little bit more importantly? Because look at the difference it made for both teams. The other thing that I take out of a lot of what Brian Cashman and Aaron Boone said, and I do remind you, Brian's going to join us in about 12 minutes. We'll go over a lot of the things that weren't covered, maybe go further on some of the things that were covered, is the Anthony Volpe situation.
Yes.
My interpretation between Boone and Cashman is that Volpe is likely not to be ready for the start of the season.
6 months before he could even dive.
6 months before. That's what gave it away to me. Like, he can swing a bat in February, but he can't dive for 6 months.
And he ain't good enough to be the DH.
No doubt. That leads me to believe, like, if I had to guess right now, and I'll even save this and record this back next year with long-term predictions, I don't think we see Anthony Volpe till May 1st. And I'm saying that not as a doctor. I'm saying it based on the words of Aaron Boone and Brian Cashman, based on his recovery time. I take it that they'd like him to be the starting shortstop, that they'd like him to be Dansby Swanson, who was brought up specifically by Aaron Boone. And Brian Cashman didn't say the name, but he did talk about how he's young. It takes some time to develop. He even talked about quarterbacks in the NFL. I think they want him to be the shortstop. But I'll tell you, and maybe this is just me reading it the way I want to read it, I don't think he's guaranteed anything.
And nor should he be. That would be the most refreshing part. But it would be very interesting, again, to see how they attack the offseason, because both the manager and general manager still mentioned that it's the ideal, you know, scenario where Volpe's the shortstop next year. Well, you had no problem having competition on this team for young guys like Jason Dominguez in the outfield that eventually were pushed out. What is the competition going to be? Who is the opening day starter at shortstop? And do they have a realistic chance, if playing well, like we mentioned yesterday, to hang on to that job when Volpe's ready?
So I don't think it's going to be someone from the outside world. Brian kept things open to, hey, our roster can be constructed in many different ways. We haven't even tacked the offseason program in terms of guys they could add. I think just off the top, it's likely to be a recovering Oswaldo Cabrera and Jose Caballero. But if one of those guys or both of those guys perform at a high level, as Anthony Volpe is about to come back. And remember this about Anthony Volpe. Anthony Volpe, once he's ready to come back, is not just going to show up in the Bronx. He's going to play rehab games.
Yeah.
And Anthony Volpe has options. If Anthony Volpe is playing his rehab games, and let's say he montasses it by struggling and not hitting.
Is that the new word we're using, montassing?
Yeah, like when a major leaguer goes on rehab and sucks.
I like that.
Well, whatever you want to call it. It could become Volpe, and we'll have to see how it plays out. I think the Yankees are going to be in a position to slow play his return, because if he's not hitting at AAA or not defending well at AAA, they have every right to option him to the minor leagues once his rehab clock expires. So I know that some Yankee fans, and this is the beauty of listening to someone speak, and we all come up with different conclusions. I know a lot of Yankee fans heard Brian Cashman and heard Aaron Boone and said, oh my God, Volpe's being shoved down our throat. I honestly didn't take it that way. I took it as they still believe in him. They still want to give him an opportunity, but there's a long way to go. Like, he's going to rehab this offseason. He's going to have to recover. And then when he recovers, he's going to have to go to the minor leagues on rehab. And yeah, he's going to have to perform. And if he doesn't perform, while those internal options may not be sexy, it doesn't mean they're going to go out and sign some kind of superstar shortstop. Not that there is one growing on a tree. Right. I think that there is a way for him not to just be guaranteed his job. He's going to have to perform, and that's all I wanted. I'm not a DFA, trade Volpe kind of guy. I'm a re-earn your spot kind of guy. And if he re-earns it and becomes Dansby Swanson, good for him. The guy's got a lot of talent, but it should not be handed to him.
No, I'm with you on re-earning it, but it's a lot easier to re-earn it if there's not enough competition there to not have you re-earn it. You know what I mean?
But is that enough competition? Is Oswaldo Cabrera and Jose Caballero enough for you?
I actually do think it is, because Cabrera, I like, ultimate utility guy. Felt horrible about him with the injury. But Caballero, whatever you want to say about him, at least I know he's a pest on the bases. And he's a factor that if you get him out there, it's like I could steal 50 bases in any given year if he's playing every day. He stole a ton this year. And Cashman mentioned him in the press conference about what a difference he made on the base pass when you got him. you know, if he comes up in April and he swiped 9 bags and you're looking at it going, this guy is creating runs for us, I think that is competition.
And guess what? That could lead to Anthony Volpe not being the guaranteed everyday shortstop. There was also contradictions from both Boone and Cashman, and I'm not surprised by this because they are different humans as much as people think they're the same person, on if this injury affected him.
Mm-hmm.
And I know Tiki was deeply offended when Boone was like, it didn't affect him. And he doubled down on that earlier today.
Yes.
And Brian Cashman was like, no, I think it affected him.
Yeah, I can't wait to ask Cashman about this. I thought he nailed it, and it was very nice and open that he could say, you know, it affected him. What I didn't understand from Aaron Boone is, you don't think it affected him. And then Boone followed up by saying, but, you know, you hope that when he gets the surgery, it does help him become a better player. Well, how could it help him on a positive end, but you didn't think it was hurting him on the negative end?
I think it's almost a defense mechanism to why they played him every day. And I understood his answer, which is, you know, guys are hurt. Guys are playing through it. We didn't think it negatively affected him enough to sit him. But looking back on it, looking back at the fact he ultimately needed surgery and there were episodes, as they called it, that caused re-aggravation, isn't that enough to say, yeah, the freaking injury affected him? I think it affected him, and that's not an excuse. I'm certainly not an Anthony Volpe defender. You heard what I just said about him, but I have to call things like balls and strikes. I mean, the guy clearly needed major surgery during the offseason. To say that didn't negatively affect his play would be wrong.
No, I think obviously it would be wrong, but I just wonder why it took till the very last at bat in game four to pinch hit for him in the postseason.
Yeah, well, they should have pinch hit for him. They should have been more aggressive, I thought, during the season in not playing him.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
Did you know your credit card points and miles can lose value to inflation? Credit card companies often reduce the redemption value of your points and miles. Now, imagine a credit card with rewards that can grow in value. With the Gemini credit card, you can earn Bitcoin or one of over 50 other cryptos instantly with no annual fee. Every swipe at the store or gas pump earns you instant rewards deposited straight to your account. Plus, sign up now for a $200 Bitcoin bonus to kickstart your rewards. Visit Gemini.com/card today. Check out the link in the description for more information on rates and fees. Again, if you're looking to invest in Bitcoin but don't know where to start, the Gemini credit card makes it easy.
The Gemini credit card is issued by WebBank. In order to qualify for the $200 crypto intro bonus, you must spend $3,000 in your first 90 days. Terms apply. Some exclusions apply to instant rewards in which rewards are deposited when the transaction posts. This content is not investment advice, and trading crypto involves risk. For more details on rates, fees, and other cost information, see rates and fees. The Gemini credit card may not be used to make gambling-related purchases.
Hey, it's Boomer.
And Geo.
Boomer and Geo is both a radio show and a podcast. You can find us anytime on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your pods.
Catch the full episode, listen by individual hour, or jump straight to the highlights. Just open up your favorite podcast app, search Boomer and Geo, and hit the follow button to get every minute of the show your way and on your time.